everyone. Welcome to the latest episode of Come This Far. This is a podcast where my friend Chris and I reach out to folks that we think are interesting and we think that you think are interesting for conversations about their life and what they're up to. And in this episode, we are reaching out to some friends, Jason and Jeremy Samadas, about their life as brothers, working in the family business, their involvement with Men Living. There's just so much. There was just so much to cover with these guys that it was tough to squeeze it into an hour. So we have to figure out how to have them come again. So, Chris, maybe kind of talk about our conversation with Jeremy and Jason.
Yeah, I mean, we've known, I shouldn't speak for you, but I think it's roughly the same. I've known Jason for a good long while, probably a decade, because he's been involved with Men Living for a long time. I think he may have been on the earliest Men Living retreats back in the day up to Wisconsin. And only really, I think, met Jeremy in person a month or so ago at Todd Adams' birthday party, was it? But I knew that he'd become involved in Men Living too. And so I knew that both of them were not just involved, but were facilitators in Men Living and were doing some really good work in their lives to help other men. I also knew that they, as brothers, grew up with a challenging father in many ways. And so I was like, I think it was the day after that birthday party, Sean, that I said to you, I was like, how well do you know Jeremy? And why would we not get those two guys on the show to talk about how they navigated or how they've sort of found this way, this sort of vocational angle of their lives, through all the messiness. And we all have messiness. Yeah. This is not.
Yes, for sure. Yep. No, I've always been fascinated by both of them as they talk about, you know, the relationship, with family of origin, with their dad and their aunt and their uncle as they worked in the family business, how that impacted their lives, the fact that the business was, you know, by all accounts, a very successful business, and how they were navigating that in my conversations with them. So just, you know, the good and the bad of all of that, and then how they have worked themselves out of that into interesting, you know, careers as well, new careers outside of those environments. I think an interesting story of life and its different twists and turns.
I almost think I could summarize, well, again, this is probably a story I make up about them, but I would summarize the brothers Samadas, as I've taken to liking to call them, as like a case study in what Men Living is about. In the sense that they grew up in a family that was very conditioned on old school masculinity. Mm-hmm. And maybe because they have their brotherhood and they were able to have a partner in crime to do this with, they found this way towards, you know, they found Men Living, but they've found this way towards a more progressive, thoughtful, modern masculinity. Is that, am I off base there?
No, I think they talk about that. I would take it a step further and say that, you know, they both have continued to get more involved in the work that we're doing as leaders in that work. And so I think they're starting to feel comfortable not only in how it's helped them, but now, okay, I got what I needed and I continue to get what I need, but I'm also going to give back in that sense, which we love. Yeah. It's kind of all about giving and getting.
Yeah. Yeah. A couple of very unpretentious, lovely, inspirational brothers.
For sure.
All right. Well, let's do this.
Let's listen. Treat, right?
This is a treat.
Samadas brothers.
This is awesome. I feel honored to be on the podcast. I really do.
Oh, come on. You guys have a great story. You're doing great work. So let's just break the ice, via interview. if you guys are game. Is everyone ready? Does anyone need to get centered before we start?
No. Feeling good.
Okay. I have two brothers. Sean has two brothers. So we both grew up beaten up and getting beat up. I'm curious. I would love to start by hearing from you guys, the brothers Samadis. What life was like growing up together for you two and the rest of your family?
Bro, you want to take the honor?
Is it going to be this civil the whole time where you're going to defer to Jerry? Because we need some fireworks here.
You want some fireworks? We've got topics.
We had some last week. They're fairly common in polo. So happy to share. I'm sure we'll get into some of that. Chris, it's an interesting question. Just for the fact that, you know, I could take that in probably so many different directions as it relates to growing up, you know, I guess specifically growing up with Jason as my brother and my existence and what that was like is, you know, I think Jason and I have talked and explored a lot of this in the last, I would say 10 to 15 years around this, you know, first brother, little brother dynamic and what that looks like. And some of the things that I struggled with being in what I call the shadow of Jason for a long time. And I think, you know, Jason cast a big shadow for me that even led me through college where I chose to go to the University of Iowa route just because my brother was there. And I joined the same fraternity because that was the cool fraternity. So, you know, I was on this path for, you know, a good 18, 19 years before I decided I wanted to break out and really explore myself. I knew I was different than my brother. We have a lot of similarities like most brothers do, but really just wanted to find myself in a different kind of way. So that's where life really, I think the first kind of, you know, fork in the road where I took a different direction and pursued baseball in college and left the University of Iowa and did some different things. And then, you know, came back to it many years later where to this day, you know, Jason can answer for himself, but I would say, you know, fortunately we've never been closer than I think we are right now. And I think some of that has come through the struggles of the relationship specifically around our dad, which I'm sure we'll get into a little bit. And so, I'll kind of stop there and, you know, let Jay fill in his pieces, but that's a kind of a quick shot of what it was like for me.
I'm not sure that the shoes were that big, guys. I think that's a little bit of a misnomer. I'll be brief on this. Despite our struggles with our dad, and I'm sure we'll talk about that, you know, I had a really, really happy childhood. And I think a lot of it is because I had a younger brother. I mean, that's just the reality of it, because how I think about my childhood, which was very happy. Like I feel I have a tremendous amount of warm memories about my childhood. Was so many of my memories are just about him and I in our own world doing our thing, right? I don't remember my mom being around a lot, even though she was a stay-at-home mom. My dad certainly wasn't around because he was off working. And whether it was summer, whether it was winter, if it was summer, we were outside with each other, with other friends playing basketball. I mean, just always outside doing stuff, always. And in the winter, we had this basement, this kind of weird total 80s style basement with the old wood, with the wood panels. You guys remember the wood panels?
Oh,
yeah.
And hard floors, because my dad and my mom basically knew we were going to trash it, and we did. But we were breaking lights all the time, but we were playing. We played soccer down there. We played dodgeball. We played roller hockey. I mean, we just were constantly playing stuff and competitive. And so, yes, there was tension a lot because we were always competitive with each other. But if I look at it from a more objective macro view, like, you know, we did almost everything together. You know, we played the same sports. We liked the same sports. And I think if, you know, I have one son, and there are many times where I feel a little sad that my son doesn't have a brother, someone, a partner the way I did. Mm-hmm. And it wasn't just sports. I mean, we did tons of dumb stuff, you know, in summers, you know, water balloon fights, and we had this big forest in our backyard. We built trails, we'd ride bikes. I mean, I just felt like we were always doing stuff together. And
fighting half the time, but yet we were just having a blast. And so I got a lot of warm memories of it. But Jeremy's right. You know, the last 5-10 years have created a different level of closeness that we didn't have before, because our family, you know, our family structure was built on this, you know, very old school European family, right? My grandparents were from Albania. They emigrated here. They got married and they created this very insular family. And from the outside, we had a business together. We vacationed together. We did everything together, right? And from the outside, it looked like we were all so close and so together. But on the inside, and again, this is obviously hindsight, it was a lot of tension. There was a lot of cracks. There were a lot of friction and unresolved issues beneath the surface that ended up blowing up later on in our family's life when the business started having some challenges. But their definition of close was just, we just did stuff together, even though nobody was really that close in the way I would describe it today. But I think the way Jeremy and I's relationship has evolved, where it is truly close now, you know, it was, and back then it was close in the way my family defined it, which was, we just do everything together. And that means you're a close family. And now it's like, I live 1,000 miles away. We don't actually do a lot together anymore, just by mere fact of geography.
Yeah.
But yet we have a relationship today that is stronger than ever. So I just think it's been an interesting evolution for, you know, almost 50 years.
How much older are you?
Almost 2 years, exactly 22 almost. Months.
And where's your sister?
She's 8 years younger than me, so she's 6 years younger than
her. Okay, all right. So she came much later.
I think my parents were done at 2, and then they had Jolaine in 1982. So, and she has a whole different experience than what Jeremy and I did. So yeah. A whole different experience, not having somebody almost like a single child, like a single child.
Yeah, because you guys would have been gone when she was going through her formative years.
Yeah, yeah.
You guys are really tight right now. How is your relationship with your sister?
I'd say it's good. I think Jeremy's a little closer with her than I am. It's good. It's good. She, you know, she just, I think some of the stuff, this is my interpretation, I think some of the stuff that Jeremy and I engage on this men's work and this deeper level, I think some of it kind of intimidates her. This is my impression. This is not anything she's ever said, but I think she respects it a lot. I think she supports it. I don't think she really understands it. And so I'm not saying that's why we're not as close, but I'd say we're pretty close, but and she's willing to go deep and talk about issues. And I really appreciate that about her, but I just haven't had like the closest relationship with her over the last few years for none other reason than I just haven't dedicated the time, to be honest with you.
Jeremy, what would you describe your relationship with your sister differently?
Slightly differently, only in the fact that when her and I connect, I think my sister is very good at, you know, I'm going to use the word deflection. I don't know if that's the right word for it, but she's very, very great at asking questions about other people. And I think sometimes I use the word deflection because I think it's a way for her to mask or avoid talking about some of the things that she has going on. So, you know, from my perspective, I've just learned to kind of pause on the questions she asked me and say, I really appreciate you asking about my life, but let's talk a little bit about what's going on with you. And to Jason's point, she goes there and she's great. I think she's more envious, to be honest, of what Jason and I have in the men's work and what we've been doing, because I don't think she has a network of friends and or close people that she can do that kind of work with.
Yeah. Yeah.
Go ahead.
We got to ask these guys, like, I'm trying to think of a creative, nice way to ask this, but of all the games that you two played, who had the higher winning percentage?
You want the fireworks now, huh, Chris? We're not even 15 minutes in. You want the fireworks?
I mean, look, I'm hoping that we can move past this, to be honest with you. I'm not saying we're going to here to counsel you two through this, but hopefully we just get it out there.
Okay, so I'm going to give you my Chris, take.
Just,
Wait a minute, just to clarify, Chris, is it just simply who's a better athlete? Is that what it's
no,
really
see,
about?
No, Jeremy, I was going to ask it that way, but then I figured that you, because you played a lot of ball, maybe more than Jason. So maybe we can answer both questions. A, who's a better athlete? And then B, and Jason, by the way, the winning percentage question favors you because you were always had 22 months on your little brother, right? So.
Yeah. This is the crux of our of our friction over the years, even today to a degree. So I will answer first and just say that, you know, well, I don't know, Chris, how you don't know me yet that well. Sean knows me, like, I'm very anal retentive. Jeremy always kind of teases me, but in a good way, because like I kept score. I kept stats. I built, this was in the mid 80s. I actually built a homemade scoreboard. I was so into this
crap. Oh my God.
With like little like cards you put when someone scored, you know, a point or a goal or something, you put a little, I built it with hangers and little cardboard, little piece of cardboard and put numbers on it.
Jason, you know, this is being recorded, right?
Sadly,
I love that shit, Chris. All the data analysis.
I was such a geek, and I still am, and I don't care. I own it now. But anyway, so I kept track, and we were actually pretty even though I had a couple years. Jeremy was certainly a good athlete, and I was a decent athlete. I wasn't great. Played all through high school, football, baseball, soccer, and then kind of in baseball, Jeremy started to take over in probably like we were in our 10, 11, 12, 13. He started playing on the all-star teams where I wasn't. And then high school really started to exacerbate itself where he was on varsity. That was the one time, probably one of my biggest joys too, is when I was a senior and he was a sophomore. And this was pretty unheard of in our school, but he got called up to varsity for the last, I don't know, month of the season. And it was awesome. And he was in center field. I was in right field. So it was a lot of fun.
Oh, wow. That's so cool.
Yeah. But it was very competitive, but there's no question. He's a better athlete than me. Just generally speaking, especially in golf and certainly in baseball. But, and I'm just going to share with you one of the things that kind of sticks with me still to this day, like family gatherings, you know, our family is all sarcasm, just like, oh, we joke, we give someone a hard time. And like, sometimes our family, many times our family doesn't know when we go too far. But the thing that kind of bothers me sometimes that I've talked to him about this is like, I feel shitty, to be honest with you, because he makes, when he paints this picture of what he was, it's like a zero sum game. Because if he was so great, that must mean I'm really shitty and I was a horrible athlete. And then he tells all the kids this. So I'm like, and I know this is all about me, but I'm like, oh, great. Well, now the kids think I'm a shitty athlete, you know, even though, you know, I played and I was decent. I wasn't fantastic, but I get all egocentric and I get kind of annoyed with them because I'm like, okay, dude, you were good, but that doesn't mean I was awful. I just wasn't as good as you. So.
All right, Jeremy, the floor is yours.
So you guys are probably familiar with that baseball term, serviceable.
Yeah. Wow.
He was a guy, or maybe to put it a different way, he was a clubhouse guy. I mean, here, he won't tell you this, guys, but in high school, his senior year, he won this award. It was called the Class Award, and it was an acronym, and I forgot what it was. It was character, leadership, blah, blah, blah. And you know what? Well-deserved. My brother was a rah-rah athlete, you know, played the game right, played it hard. You know, did he have the most talent? No, but he knows that. No. So, you know, to his credit, I will say this, and I've told this story many times. I would say, you know, Chris, you asked a very specific question about winning percentage. I would say growing up, quite honestly, my brother had a higher winning percentage in most games we played. And what he didn't tell you is that used to piss me off so bad that I would just quit. I would quit before the game was over because I couldn't take losing to him. I literally would just stop the game and it drove him nuts. He would chase me. He would grab me. He'd be like, it's not over. I'm not done with you. You know, he'd want to drag me back in so he could get the win. So, you know, to his credit, I will say this too. You know, when we were growing up, you know, we were in a modest, you know, middle income family. So, you know, we didn't have the luxury. And I don't think it was the time in the 80s when kids went to all those sports camps and got specialized training. And I got like a nutritionist.
Club,
I got
club teams and all this stuff. Right?
Sure. Yeah. Yeah.
Yeah. So, you know, I really credit a lot of my, I would say, athleticism growing up to playing against my brother and playing against his friends, 2 years older. So, I mean, it was fun to play with his buddies because, of course, I didn't want to be that last guy picked on the team. I wanted to show off. I wanted to be able to compete with those guys. So then when I would go play baseball games with guys my age, it was actually a lot easier. So, you know, I really didn't grow up going to any camps. We didn't do any of that stuff in the summer. It was literally, as Jason said, playing in the backyard and getting kids around the neighborhood, of which most of those kids were older than me and older than Jason. So that's where I attribute a lot of my, you know, younger kind of athleticism moving on into, you know, older years. So
yeah, that's funny. I like to take a lot of credit for my little brothers being better athletes than me.
Yeah, I'll do that too. And I love the undertone about, you know, he won the class award, which really means he bought, you know, he hit 210, but you know, he was a clubhouse guy.
I was serviceable, Sean.
You're never gonna let that down.
You guys ever say serviceable to me?
I cannot guarantee it's not coming up again.
Sean liked that a lot. Yeah.
Here's the funny part that Jay kind of said, which we can end on this one, is, you know, it's funny because I would say, Jay, correct me if I'm wrong, in the last 5 years, when we're with the kids and the banter starts and we're joking about, you know, the better athlete, this and that, it's only been recently that Jason will stop and say, listen, yep, I can admit Jeremy's a better athlete. And then he'll go into the, but I also did this, and this.
Uh-huh.
So, you know, I think it's a turning point in our relationship, because for a while it was the, no, you sucked at this. I was better at that. You did this. So I think we've kind of wrestled through that one at this point.
Was your dad a big athlete, and was he involved in, like, was it important for him to see you guys, maybe not necessarily winning, but like playing sports?
Yeah. Yeah. First of all, he my dad was an excellent athlete. My dad played baseball at Northwestern.
Oh, wow.
Was a standout in high school, played baseball at Northwestern, then got into some trouble. It was the early 70s, so you can imagine what kind of trouble he got in.
Mm-hmm.
Failed out of Northwestern, then went to Southern Illinois and lived in a trailer with my mom, because they were high school sweethearts, right? But my dad was an excellent, excellent baseball player. There was talk that he was going to potentially get drafted out of high school. It didn't actually happen, but there was some talk that he was going to get drafted. He was a really, really good athlete.
Yeah, and he was one of those guys. I don't know, you know, Sean and Chris, if you guys can relate to this, but you know, even as a young kid, I remember when, you know, Dad would play catch with us. And you know how you can just watch somebody and you can tell the natural athleticism of him? Mm-hmm. I mean, I remember as a kid, sometimes, you know, my palm hurting, not because my dad was trying to, you know, overthrow it, but he just had that lefty natural kind of, reminds me a lot of that, you know, Robert Redford at the end of The Natural, that last scene where he's playing with his son out in the field. And you can tell Robert Redford has that very natural kind of throw and instinct of the game. So that's what I remember.
Yeah. Yeah. And then he, you know, he didn't attend a lot of games, Chris and Sean, because he, I mean, to his credit, he was building a business and he was working a lot of nights and a lot of weekends. But when he did come, his presence was felt, not vocally, just energetically.
So what does that mean?
Wait, yeah. What does that mean? Did you guys feel pressure?
Yeah. So I'm not kidding. He would come up behind the backstop when one of us were up. Okay. And he wouldn't say anything. He wasn't one of those guys like, come on, Jason, come on, Jeremy, you can do it. Get ahead. You know, he wasn't doing any of that stuff. He was doing, all he would do is, you know, we would peek back at him because, you know, he was our dad. And when he was at a game, it was kind of a big deal. And he'd give us some sort of emotion, usually like like this. I know this is a podcast.
Yeah,
camera, right. So he'd lift his elbow up.
Yeah.
He'd lift his elbow up as being like, that was his way of saying, go get him.
Yeah.
You know, like get a hit. Come on, do it. Wouldn't say a word though. But I will say, I won't speak for Jeremy. For me, it was incredibly intimidating. It was like, oh shit, I gotta perform for my dad. My dad's here. That's unusual. I gotta do something here because he's watching.
Did he debrief after the game? And if he wasn't at the game, did he ask about the games that he wasn't at?
I'll let Jeremy talk about the debrief because that's a huge trigger for him.
Okay.
I don't recall him ever really checking in with us on games when he wasn't there.
He
may have, but I don't remember him coming home from work and saying, "Hey, how'd the game go? What'd you do? Yeah. Did you get hit?" You know, I don't remember that.
Yeah. Jeremy, debrief.
Well, guys, you went right into the deep end on this one because if you saw my facial expression, I kind of leaned back in my chair, you know, hands over my face for a second because to what Jay said, it was incredibly intimidating because my dad would show up probably in the fourth or fifth inning of a 6-inning game and the game would be over. And my brother, like you said, it'd be the silent, you know, ride home with dad and you'd get in the car and my dad would, you know, say one of two things, which was, you know, just a question, what happened out there or what's the story? And, you know, as an 8, 9, 10, 11 year old kid, what does that mean, dad? What happened out there? You're sitting there going, well, dad, you just watched two innings. You saw me hit a home run and I struck out three guys on the pitching mound. And you're thinking, dad, I did great. Tell me how good I am. And that just wasn't my dad. So he would ask this, you know, very kind of cryptic, what happened? What's the story? And you'd end up, you know, telling him what you thought was a great game and all the things you did. And he never said, well, you didn't do enough or you could have done this. I don't recall that. I just remember it kind of fell silent from there. I don't remember a lot of, yeah, that was great. I love the way you did this, that. And then I know for me, I just left as a young kid thinking, well, that feels like I didn't do enough. I probably should have done even more. So I think in some ways, it was a motivator for me. It really was, because I wanted the next time dad showed up, I wanted to say, fine, that one home run wasn't good enough. Let me try and hit two home runs, you know? So it really pushed me, but maybe in a somewhat unhealthy way later on.
Did you two ever talk about that back then? Like Jason, did you know that Jeremy was bothered by this?
No. I don't remember having those conversations. And I don't remember. I mean, I do remember those to a degree. I think he got them worse than me. I don't know why. Maybe just happenstance, but
maybe because he was a better athlete. I'm just,
yeah,
just kidding.
Yeah,
just kidding.
Thank you, Chris.
Oh, wow.
even as a 12-year-old, that was serviceable. But it could be he saw the real talent in Jeremy and he saw, and listen, what we haven't talked about is, you know, Jeremy and my dad had a bond when we were kids that I did not have with my dad. And so I think there was this really strong connection. I think, you know, they were both lefties. I think we all knew that Jeremy, especially in baseball, was excelling. And I think my dad took to him in a different, and they also had very similar, have similar personalities. And so, you know, whenever it was the three of us, I always felt like it was the two of them together, or kind of like not ganging up on me all the time, but sometimes. But I think that to your question, Chris, I think they just had this different bond between the two of them. And I'm not going to say it's better, but as a kid, I definitely felt like I was a little bit left out because they had this connection that I just didn't seem to have with my dad. I was kind of fearful of my dad. I never had comfort with him until I became an adult, whereas I saw Jeremy and my dad, when I saw them, they seemed to be at ease with each other. Whenever I was with my dad, even if it was one-on-one, I was never at ease with him.
Mm-hmm. Did you feel that, Jeremy?
No, I think that what I didn't know then was, I think a lot of that bond came from, I would agree with Jason that our personalities, I think, meshed up pretty good. But I think a lot of that for me was a very defensive posture. So the easiest thing for me to do instead of, you know, take on my dad at 12 years old was to go down that road of sarcasm and connect with him at the expense of Jason. And a lot of that was making fun of him. It was my dad and I kind of poking humor at him, whether that be from athletics or, you know, later on, you know, I don't know if Jay wants to hear a story, but there was some stuff that happened around some college entrance, you know, acceptance type stuff where he was, you know, applying to schools and some stuff happened where my dad just said some super negative things. And I can probably recall sitting there laughing right behind my dad's back as he was kind of tearing my brother up about a very disheartening, you know, letter that my brother got from a denial of a school that, you know, he had interest in. So to me, I didn't know what was going on, Sean. I think it was easy for me to just bond with him through making fun of other people, which is a very common characteristic of our family. We don't usually, you know, our humor rests at somebody's expense.
Yeah. So I'm going to fast forward. I mean, I think the relationship with your dad is one of the reasons why we're here talking and the impact on your lives, because you ended up going into this business that you talk about that he was building. And so, maybe let's talk about that relationship that you just, shared with us, Jason. And did that translate you guys, and maybe talk to us about how you ended up in the family business, and then that the nature of that relationship and how it impacted. Let's start with work, and then let's go from there.
Me getting into the business, as the firstborn of the next generation, especially again in a very patriarchal family, I was the first boy, the firstborn, and I took a lot of pride in that, in being that, because I know that. Again, I'm saying this in retrospect, but I know that I got a lot of special treatment being a boy and being the firstborn. Mm-hmm. I did. And so from an early age, and this was the culture that my grandfather really grew, was, I was so rah-rah family, just like I was with my baseball team or whatever. Like, that was just kind of my personality. Like, I was rah-rah team Samadas. And so I just knew, even in high school and college, I was going to work for my family. You know, there was a lot of pride that I had to say, okay, this business that has been grown and been tremendously successful started by my grandfather with my dad. Now my dad's run it with his brother. I want to be the next generation. I want to lead this company. Like, I knew that. And so
two things. Tell the listeners what the business was.
Sure.
And were they encouraging you to do that as well, or was that just your own inspiration?
So it was healthcare. So they built a healthcare business, basically nursing homes, retirement centers, assisted living, home health, like the whole spectrum of post-acute, post-hospital care. Mm-hmm. They built this business from the ground up. And by the time their peak, they had built it to about a $250 million business. Mm-hmm. It was impressive. Mm-hmm. Anyway, so does that answer that, Charlie?
Yeah, and were your grandfather, your dad, your uncle, were they encouraging you to be in the business, or were you like, no, this is
my grandfather very much, but my dad not so much. My dad was, to his credit, I think, willing to let me kind of figure out what I wanted to do, but I think he kind of knew where I wanted to go anyway. Mm-hmm. And then actually, you know, we're talking about some, I will say one quick anecdote of a really encouraging story with my dad. Right after I graduated school, right after I graduated college, I was going to go get a job. I felt it was important to get a job outside my family business, to get a little outside experience, before coming back into the family business. So I had a finance degree. I went and started interviewing with some banks downtown Chicago, and I was having a hard time getting a job. Mm-hmm. And my dad sat down with me about 3 months after I graduated, and he had like one of the most heartfelt conversations I've ever had with him. He said, Jason, basically this long and the short of it is, you know, you can go out and get some great experience and that will certainly help you. But if you come work for the family business right now, you will get a training program. You will get experience like you never would outside. Mm-hmm. Yeah. And we're going to teach you how to do the business, and we're going to you know, have you learned it from the ground up? As soon as he said that, I was like, where do I sign? I'm in.
Yep.
And I was just, it was just such a great conversation. And that's how I decided to join the company.
Jeremy, how did you get in? And let's get you both in the business and then go from there.
Not too dissimilar to Jason. I finished up college and decided that I wanted to also work outside the family business. I went up to Manhattan, New York, and started a hospitality career at a 5-star, 5-diamond hotel in Midtown, because I knew that's where I thought, at least at the time, that's where I wanted to go. I felt like my personality fit that. I really liked the hospitality business. I had worked in some restaurants in college and got a feel for that. So similar to Jason in this regard, I was home for a wedding from New York one weekend. And my dad was just asking some probing questions about, what do you like about hospitality? What do you like about the hotel business? And then kind of, you know, drew the correlation to, well, if you like that business, listen, we're taking care of seniors in that same environment. We're feeding them meals. We're doing activities.
Right.
We're doing, you know, this and that. So, you know, same kind of heartfelt conversation was like, and by the way, we're opening a new retirement community up in the northwestern suburbs of Chicago. This could be a great opportunity for you to see it from the ground up, project manage it, open it up, do the pre-leasing. And I was just kind of the same thing Jason said, sold, ready to go. So I moved back probably within, you know, 30, 60 days. And that started my career in the family business as well.
So he wanted you guys in. Is that, I mean,
he did.
Yeah,
he definitely did.
Yeah.
He definitely did. And so did our grandfather. Our grandfather was also a huge supporter, wanted his grandkids, wanted this to be a legacy for his family.
Yeah.
So, you know, we were kind of, our family wasn't a very like positive, like it was a lot of sarcasm and negativity. But I will say, like, the one thing that they really did embrace us with open arms was coming into the family business.
Hey, listeners. If you enjoy our show, please consider following us or sharing the show with a friend. And I want to take a quick second to shout out our sponsor, Half Acre Beer Company, from their iconic Daisy Cutter Pale Ale to the refreshing Bodum IPA. All of the beers that these guys are making are a testament to quality and to their passion for brewing. So cheers to Half Acre Beer Company for supporting If You've Come This Far and for brewing great beers. And now let's get back to the show. You know, mixing family and work can go any one of many directions. So once you were both in there, and of course, and business, especially when it's your own business, entails a lot of pressure too, right? So how did it go? I'm guessing it wasn't all just a bundle of joy. Like, this is great. We get to work together and be really successful.
Yeah, and along that line, I'm curious too about Jeremy's relationship with your dad versus yours, Jason, and how those relationships transcended, you know, you growing up as well.
Yeah, I'll just say to Chris's first question that it was I was getting into my mid-20s, late 20s. I was living in the city, and I started realizing how much I needed a break from the family. For example, every Sunday, my grandfather would host dinners, either at his house or we'd go out to dinner as a family. And when I was living in the city, you know, single at that time, then I started dating my soon-to-be wife. Like, that's the last thing I wanted to do. Like, I just got to the point where it's like, no, I want to, like, I living in the city, I felt like I lived in my own world. I was so far away from them, even though I wasn't, and I loved it. And that was my world. That was my sanctuary. And that was like my way to debrief from all the craziness that would go on during the week at work. So I would not go to those dinners. I would get some shit for not going to those dinners. But that was my way to like decompress and compartmentalize, say, okay, this is my work life, which includes a lot of my family. But I got to have my own time.
Yeah,
because it was just, there were no boundaries. There were no boundaries.
Jeremy?
So the only thing I would add to it from my perspective is when I first joined the business, Jason and I were actually living together. When he talks about the city, him and I were working in the family business for about my first three years. I joined in middle of 2000. Jason's our statistician. He might say, that's wrong. You actually joined in August. But I think it was sometime in the year. mid-year 2000, and
it was actually 99.
All right, there you go.
There you go.
So we were.
That's when you moved back from New York.
And we were living in the city with our cousin who joined the family business later. At that time, he wasn't. But interestingly enough, you know, Jay and I would say my story is Jay and I weren't really close at that time. I was going to our remote location that was being built way out in the suburbs. And Jason was on this track with my dad and my uncle to take some additional operational responsibility. So for those first 3 years, just besides living with each other, we were doing two totally different things. I was focused on this retirement division, and Jason was really cutting his teeth on our, you know, nursing home business, which was a little bit more intense and different. And he was getting mentored on the inside by my dad and our uncle. So my first couple of years, I didn't have a great, I would say for me, it wasn't a great experience. I felt like I was out in left field trying to open this project. I wasn't getting a lot of support from my dad and or my uncle. And so it was a totally different track than Jason was on, and the intensity that I think he probably felt when working closely with my dad and my uncle, who were supposedly, you know, his mentors. And he can probably talk a little bit about that experience. So very different in the early years of working together in this family business.
Would you say that you got a lot of responsibility at a young age too? I mean, did they want to see what you could do, where your capabilities were at? I mean, you're in your mid to late 20s, right?
I was in my early to mid 20s.
Yeah.
When I took on this responsibility, when I moved back from New York, and Sean, I would honestly tell you that I was absolutely overmatched.
Yeah.
You know, trying to run a construction crew and do pre-leasing on an assisted living building with a hospitality background. I mean, it was completely overmatched. And that's where I think some of the tension started, where I was supposed to be reporting into my dad. I was supposed to have my uncle helping me on certain parts, because our uncle was a lawyer by trade, and he was really good at the operations. My dad was really good in the construction and how they kind of divide and conquered their roles.
Mm-hmm.
And so my dad was supposed to be supporting me on the construction while my uncle was helping me get the place open. And it was honestly, it was a disaster.
Yeah.
In terms of getting their support. And I was, you know, 45 to an hour away from the office. And I felt very abandoned, to be honest with you. And I felt like it kind of felt like I remember questioning, why did I move back for this very early on?
But let me give you guys a little bit of context to that as well, is that this is 2000, 2001. Without getting into the details of how it happened, Jeremy was opening a retirement center that my dad and my uncle didn't even want to do. It was forced by my grandfather in the last stages of his life, because he wanted to keep going because he was the ultimate entrepreneur, right? So right from the beginning, my dad and my uncle didn't have their heart in this property, okay? And this is also the peak of the business. This is when the cracks really started exposing themselves in the massive conflict that began and to this day is still in effect between my dad and my uncle, which then had massive ramifications throughout the family, throughout the company, throughout everyone's lives. So the reason Jeremy, I think the reason Jeremy didn't get a lot of support, because my uncle and my dad were just distracted, didn't have the energy. And quite frankly, at that point, they were at the top of their game. They were making a shitload of money. I don't think they cared that much, to be honest with you.
Jeremy, did you know that? Did you know that dynamic that Jason just shared?
I did. Yeah. And, you know, and I think, you know, guys, I just want to share this with you. And Jay, I don't know if I've ever told you this, and I'd be curious to see how this lands for you, or if this, you know, what emotion comes up for you. But I genuinely felt like, you know, we joked and we laughed early on in this podcast about, you know, the athleticism and Jason and I kind of comparing ourselves as brothers early on growing up. I always felt that my brother was kind of the so-called chosen one when it came to his path in the healthcare business with our family. I feel like when he came in, there was a very clear path for him, hopefully to ascend to the future CEO, the board ownership level. And I just never felt that connection. I felt like I was kind of put out in left field and, hey, Jeremy, go do this. We'll kind of see. We'll check in on you. We'll see how that goes in the next couple of years. And, you know, I just never felt that same connection or had never had that same warm, fuzzy experience that I think Jason may or may not have had. And I'd be curious to hear how it was for him. I know a little bit, but.
Before Jason answers two questions, I want you guys to tell us what happened to that project that you worked on, Jeremy. And secondly, to use the word serviceable again, I'm curious, did you feel like Jason was had the skill set for that work, or did you feel any sense that, well, he's just serviceable and they're just elevating him just because, or did you feel like he had the skill set for that role and for that work that they were kind of investing in him?
Great question, Sean. Undoubtedly, I thought my brother was absolutely the right mentality, strength, smart. I mean, ambition. I mean, my brother Jay worked his ass off. I mean, mm-hmm. He was 6+ days. He didn't take that, you know, so-called family entitled role sometimes that the next generation takes. I feel like my brother was all in. I respected the shit out of that. And I still do, you know, because I know what he put into it. So I absolutely thought he was not only, you know, deserving of it, but I knew in my mind he was the right guy to, I think, lead our next generation into the future, wherever that was going to go. So no, I felt great about the experience he was getting.
Okay.
I think in terms of what happened to that project, is that a part of the business that never went anywhere? Or?
No, it ended up being an okay asset in the portfolio. We ended up turning it into, and this is not to get too technical, but it opened up as a independent retirement community. Then we morphed into an assisted living. So we added that next level of care onto it. And then we worked with the state that was running this kind of a pilot program, which basically had some funding tied back to the state for those in Illinois that couldn't afford assisted living. So we helped pilot that program, which ultimately brought our occupancy up, the building filled, and, you know, it kind of wrapped into the portfolio like everything else we were doing. But, you know, the main crux of our business, guys, was really skilled nursing facilities, or what we call those nursing homes. We only had 3 retirement communities, of which this project I'm talking about was one of those in that portfolio on that side of the ledger.
Okay.
You guys talked at one point, maybe Jason was describing how you came back, Jeremy, from New York, and you guys lived together. I was imagining for a brief second that you guys were living the typical Chicago 20-something life somewhere in Wrigleyville, going out every night, partying, whatever. Was there any of that, or were you guys just like a ball of stress, just trying to grind?
No,
maybe the answer is different for each of you.
Have you met them?
I'm not going to. I'll speak first. In those years that we lived in the city, there were three years we lived together with our cousin, who we were close with, as like a brother to us. And we did some things together, but we also did our own thing. That's when I first met my soon to be wife, which is now my ex-wife. I'll speak for myself. Yeah, I was going out a lot. And in full disclosure, I was in my 20s, I had a pretty regular regimen of using substances. Like I partied pretty hard as an outlet. So
yeah,
I always kind of, and I still kind of look at life this way, where I really respect what Jeremy, I appreciate what you said about working hard. And that's how I see myself. I like to work hard and I like to play hard. I kind of like to burn the candle at both ends. Mm-hmm. And I did it. I partied a lot. I went out a lot. Sometimes we would go out together, but not all the time. And I had all my college friends in the city. I had all my high school friends in the city. It was like I lived in the city for 7 years from 1997 till 2004. Those were some of the, I would say most fun I've had in those years were just a ton of fun.
You talk about you said your soon to be wife, now your ex-wife. Both of you guys are divorced. Maybe talk a little bit about you know, the impact on your lifestyle and at the job and the work and the family, and how, you know, and how that affected your life outside of work. Because we're not really getting to, and I'll use the word toxic. I think you guys would, the toxic environment of,
yeah,
of the business that worked its way into your life.
It was an incredibly toxic environment, and we could talk for hours about this. The best way I can describe it is, it was incredibly manipulative. It was incredibly negative. It was incredibly difficult, especially as the business started to not perform as well. And it was a slow decline. And then the relationship started to fracture, and then it just became this territorial civil. It became like a civil war. Mm-hmm. It was terrible. It was like two families versus one family. And between the two brothers and my aunt, who also owned it. So that's the family business was owned by my dad one third, my uncle one third, and my aunt one third. This is after my grandfather had passed, and it became a civil war. And Jeremy and me and my two cousins, who also worked in the business, got thrown into it. Oh. And with my dad specifically, he's a lot like Trump. And I hate to say that because I'm not a fan of Trump, as Sean knows, but he's a lot like Trump, because if you don't express loyal, if you're not loyal to my dad, if I wasn't loyal to him, if I ever questioned him, I got my ass kicked. I wasn't loyal. I didn't love him. I didn't care about him. I mean, it was ugly. It was brutal. If I ever didn't support my dad, even though I may have thought, and many times I did, he was 100% wrong. Mm.
Mm.
So taking all of that stress and being thrown, trying to do my job, trying to manage the conflict of the family business, getting my ass kicked in a lot of ways, you know, just from the business and, you know, criticized by my family members all the time, then I would take that home and try to, you know, be with my wife and my young kids. And yeah. I'm not using that as an excuse,
mm-hmm.
but there's no question in my mind that that was a significant contributor to the fact that my marriage failed.
Jeremy?
Yeah. Yeah, not too dissimilar of an experience. I would say that, you know, the loyalty, you know, I use the word loyalty that Jason talks about, you know, toward my dad was exactly that. You know, I remember vividly that our dad during this time, and I think it's fair to point out to you guys that, you know, the stress of the business is one thing, but, you know, this so-called ship was already starting to turn on its side. This Titanic was already taking on water. The business, you know, revenues were declining. We were having, you know, really big issues during the times that Jason's talking about after we were in the business. So, you know, finger pointing started, you know, Jason talked about the Civil War. I think a lot of, instead of fighting the business, which was hard enough on its own, you know, we started fighting each other, and it got nasty, and it impacted, you know, Jason, myself, my generation. And specifically for me, I remember coming home a lot of nights, absolutely wounded, worn out, sleepwalking through some of the things in my marriage. And I know it impacted the way I showed up for my wife early on, the way I showed up for my kids. So yeah, it's all kind of right there. And I want to be clear too, guys, that I don't hold the business, or I don't hold my dad 100% yep. accountable, as if, listen, if this all didn't happen and I chose a different career path, life would be very different today. Yep. I'm not saying that.
Yep.
Yeah.
And, no, I get that.
Go ahead, Jason.
I just add one more thing, Chris. Again, because I know we are getting close on time, I want to kind of bring it back to the brother relationship, because how I look at everything that's happened in 50 years, 48 years between the two of us, we have all these shared experiences. We have shared experiences as kids, young adults, and now adults, because we also have the shared experience of going through difficult divorces, right? And all of that, I think, has brought us even closer, because, you know, we now, and this is on me, I will own this, is that so many times, especially younger, I wanted my brother to be like me. And when he didn't do things like me, I'd get pissed. I'm like, why are you not following in my footsteps? I'm following in dad's footsteps. You're the younger brother. This is the way it should go. Why aren't you being like me? And I had a hard time getting over that for a while. I'm over it now, I think. But anyway, my point is that, you know, what I think brought us together was respecting that we handled all of our shared experiences differently. Like Jeremy handled the business different than I did, you know, but we have that mutual respect for one another. It created this bond. But then I think when Jeremy started going through his divorce, that was the kind of the thing that really brought us to where we are today, because I think, and I'm going to give, I don't do this often, but I'll give myself a little, like I knew how to approach my, I finally learned how to approach my brother. And the way to approach my brother is not to come in like dad junior and teach him what he needs to do and tell him how to do things. That's not what he needs, especially when he was getting divorced, what were you, 44, 45 years old. He needed someone to just provide some guidance, say, here's what happened with me. Here's how I handled this. Here's an option for you. Here's another option for you. Right. But giving him that unconditional support to say, however you choose to do your divorce, it's going to be your divorce. But I have some experience that can give you some perspective that maybe, you know, you wouldn't have had otherwise. And I think that, and I won't speak for you, man, but for me, that felt really good to be that kind of a brother instead of the brother always being like, hey, man, this is what you got to do. And I think that's what, in the end today, I would say really created this bond that we have that has brought it to a level that it's never been before.
This is a great lead in. I wanted to explore this exact same area because I know that families, maybe it's the generation we grew up in, but also maybe some of our European families, we have this tendency to like, we'll figure this shit out together, right? I'll lean on my siblings, you know, whatever. So I was curious in exploring the evolution towards where you guys are right now, because one of the reasons I wanted to talk to you guys, because you've both gone through this sort of these journeys. Now you're in a place where you've completely figured out how and when to ask for help, but you've also gotten to the point where you're both trying to serve and help others. And was that having to break out of the Samadas family sort of mentality to get to that point?
Yeah, for sure. For me, you know, it took that really hard moment back in 2017 to finally step away. And I think that was just a pivotal moment for me in my life where, you know, I stepped away, you know, against what I think was that, you know, the pervasive conversation with my dad, which I'll never forget too, when I remember walking into his office on that last day. And, you know, Jason talked a little bit about it, but there was this last attempt I felt like with my dad to say, kind of in his own words, how dare you? How dare you leave me here alone? How dare you abandon me, right? And that's the story I made up. He didn't use those words, but, you know, and I remember just standing there saying, or actually not saying anything, knowing that I just needed to exit stage left. It was the right thing to do to leave and not be so-called manipulated by this toxic kind of last breath of, no, don't leave me, stay around. So yeah, it was an absolutely pivotal moment from that standpoint. And then, you know, not that long after, guys, is when, you know, my divorce and everything kind of crumbled in front of me. And so it gave me this tremendous opportunity to, I think, forge the relationship Jason talks about. I think it was a pivotal moment for our relationship where, you know, Jay was there standing by my side the entire time I was going through my divorce. COVID had started in early 2020 when I was separated, living by myself in the city. And our conversations and the strength that he provided through even the support of, hey, Jeremy, here's an opportunity. Maybe, you know, men living could be an opportunity. So there was all these different things that Jason talks about that I think were pivotal to my so-called the starting of my healing and the starting of my, you know, kind of second mountain, as I refer to it, as David Brooks is one of my favorite books that helped me during the time. Mm-hmm. Which then just, you know, kind of organically led me down this road of men living. And then, you know, now picking up the pieces of the divorce and separation group, which I feel like I can contribute a lot to guys going through this stuff. Jason and I talking about some leadership stuff in the future around the Men Living advances and whatnot. So, you know, I feel like I've just kind of stepped into the strength I've always known was there. And I just, you know, I owe a lot of that. And I mean that in a very humble way to my brother, because I feel like sometimes without him on by my side, I don't know. Yes, I know I would have got through it, but I don't know that I would have gotten through it in the same kind of way that I did.
Yeah, Jason.
Oh, I mean, that's very nice of you to say. It took a lot to, you know, Jeremy and I were just going back, just big picture here. We were, a lot of negative messaging was given to us throughout our lives. And I'm not trying to play a victim here, because I think we were very fortunate to have a lot of things we had too, but at the same time, it was very toxic. And I think for both of us to be able to kind of break out of that and to not continue that trend, and that's a source of motivation for me. It's like, oh no, I'm going to do things very differently. I'm going to raise my kids differently. I'm going to have different relationships with my family that are not going to, that's just breaking the mold is what I would like to say, you know? And I think that still causes a lot of tension even to this day with my dad, because he sees us as very different than him. And I think it's threatening to him. But yeah, that's really what the last 10 years has been about. It's about finally, what I would say, finally claiming the masculinity that I want to display instead of displaying the masculinity that I thought my family wanted me to display, which was really what I did for many, many years of my life. Being the man they wanted me to be instead of the man I wanted to be.
So speaking of that, can you guys tell us what you're both doing now after you left the business? Because I've got you both have interesting stories there.
Yeah. I mean, you know, for me, my love has always been aviation, you know, growing up right next to O'Hare as a kid. And so I'd been a pilot for 24 years, started with Jeremy, ironically. And then when I left the business, I said, I'm going to do what I'm passionate about for the rest of my career. And so I pursued my aviation career, and now I'm a captain for a regional airline that partners with United and American. And I honestly, guys, you guys know this because I thought to, but I have never been happier. I should say I have never been more content. I've never been happier. I've never been more proud of where I am today than I ever have in my life, just because this path is my path. It's not my dad's path. It's not my grandfather's path. It's my path. And not only is it my path, but it's also doing something that I am absolutely 100% passionate about. Mm-hmm. And so I feel so fortunate that I was able to find it.
Jeremy?
Yeah, I think, you know, to what Jason said, I think the important thing about what we've talked about as brothers too, Jay, is that you and I have talked many times about this in terms of what you alluded to, where, you know, the two generations above us both had this toxic pattern where the brothers ended up not talking up until their death. These very, you know, terrible relationships that ended with our grandfather not talking to his brother in Canada. And it looks like our dad and his brother are going down the same road, and I can't really see it changing. And Jason and I have taken this, I think, very healthy approach to say, hey, let's stop that here. Our generation's not going to do that. Let's make this commitment to each other, and let's kind of forge forward in a way that we're going to break that cycle. And I just love that we're very intentional about that. And so I think it's helped us kind of keep that beacon out there when we look at it and go, bro, what are we doing here? Let's talk through this, right? Mm-hmm. Not that there's this fear of we're going down that road, but, you know, just one little sidebar. There was a really tough time when Jason and I were in the business, amongst many, where Jason was my direct report for a while. And that was probably the worst thing that could have ever happened. It just created way too much tension for what we needed at that time amidst the bigger family toxicity that was happening. So, you know, we had to fight against even that many years later. And I think, you know, my story is, I think just us not being in the business together has also organically created this bond between us, because we can share stories outside of the family business. I can ask questions about what is it like being a pilot? What is it like when you're sitting in the cockpit and you're in a delay? What are you doing about this, this, and this? And he can ask questions about my life. So, you know, my life is maybe not as interesting as a United pilot, but I've actually gone back into or stayed in what I'm most passionate about, which is hospitality. Yeah. Our family at somewhere along the way, we opened a restaurant, and then I opened another restaurant with Jason and a few other family members of our generation. And so I've gotten back into that, running operations on behalf of the ownership group. And I've gotten into some real estate in Wisconsin in the last couple of years with a completely outside partner, which I think has also been incredibly healthy for me to experience that that different perspective and not so much in the family realm. So it's been great. It's been really great. I echo Jason's same thoughts about, you know, waking up and having this different feeling and passion about what I'm getting up to do every day, serving, you know, meals. And in this case, also, you know, putting rental houses online in these communities that we're developing in Wisconsin. So it's been an awesome, awesome experience post-trauma of the family business.
Does your dad or your uncle know what Jeremy and Jason Samadas are doing with Men Living and vulnerability and modern masculinity?
Well, you know, let me answer that for a second? Because my answer is really quick, Chris. My answer is, I can tell you emphatically, my dad doesn't know what I'm doing from my mouth because I haven't talked to my dad, sadly, in about 3 years. So if he knows anything, it's probably through my brother or my sister or some other way. And I have no relationship with my uncle at all at this stage since I left in 2017.
Yeah. And I also have no relationship with my uncle. And that's a good thing. He's a very toxic person. But with my dad, it's funny, when I was in Chicago for the facilitator weekend last month, you know, I stayed with him intentionally just to spend a little time with him. And we actually got in an argument because,
shocker.
Yeah, I know. Right. He would ask questions about what was going on, what I was doing, but, and maybe I'm sensitive to this, but I felt a lot of it was very dismissive. Dismissive. You know, when I told him there were 25 men meeting on a Thursday after or for a Friday all day, one of his questions in a series of questions was, doesn't anybody work?
Oh, yeah.
Like, yeah, no. Yeah. We're all just a bunch of entitled white men, you know, middle-aged white men who just, you know, just stuff like that. So, you know, he knows a little bit more about me and that we're in the men's group. But again, I think he views it from his lens, which is, it's weird. It's useless. It's, what do you guys do? Sit around and hold hands. It's kind of like, again, my dad's very old school, and you know, his version of masculinity is very different than ours.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, I mean, last thing I'll say about that is, like, we shouldn't completely judge and give up on men like your dad and your uncle, right? Because these are men we'd also like to reach and help. So
yeah, for sure.
Anything else before we ask the final questions here at the end, very quickly, because Jason's got a split, that you guys wanted to cover? I mean, there's lots more that I would have liked to have gone deeper into.
Yeah, I guess the only thing, and I maybe this is just me being fearful that, you know, I just want to say that I've had a lot of struggles with my dad. There's no question about it. But the thing that's really the most hurtful is not necessarily all the things he's done or that he's said that has been hurtful. It's that he can't engage with us in a way that I think he really wants to, because in his heart, he's got a big heart. He really does. And he walls it off so much. And I see it every day. And it makes me sad. And I don't have a lot of anger towards him. I have some. I can get triggered, but I have mostly sadness, because I think he's missing out on some really rich relationships he could have with me, with Jeremy, with even his grandkids, that I see him just not being able to get out of his own head and to let his walls down. And it makes me sad, because he really does care about people. He's really, at his core, a good man. He really is.
Well, and I just have to emphasize that, Jason, because I think that statement about your dad is one of the reasons why Men Living exists is the walling off emotion and not engaging in relationships is kind of the script that we are often sold as boys. Yeah. And we're trying to shatter that because it results in not a lot of healthy behaviors, and not a lot of happy men. And so, thanks for bringing that up.
Yeah. And I just want to add really quick, the only, to what Jason said too, you know, as much as I think right now in the last 3 years, I've had the biggest struggle with my dad personally. I will always go back, and Jason and I have talked a lot about this, that from an integrity standpoint, you know, I fully believe that, you know, my dad has taught us the authenticity and consistency that he taught us from a very early age and building our foundation as men today. And I will always give him credit for that. You know, he's just a man of really supreme integrity. So, you know, aside from the things that he may be limited on that Jason said in terms of his emotions sometimes, he is a very good man with an absolutely the highest pillar of integrity that I think I've actually ever seen. And that says a lot, right? It really does. And I mean that truly.
You guys are, obviously the reason we had you on is partly because I walked away from meeting you, Jeremy, at Todd's house and having known Jason for a long time and I'm inspired by you guys and the journey that you're on. So
yeah, agreed.
Thank you guys.
We have to do the obligatory. I mean, let's make it fast, Jason. I'll call on you guys. Here's the three questions. I'll call on you because I don't want you to fight. First question is, what do you wish you could have told your 10-year-old self? Jeremy, you go first.
Cry. It's okay to cry.
Jason?
I would tell my 10-year-old self to chill the fuck out.
You said earlier, Jason, you said you weren't sure if I knew you well enough to know that you're sort of a control freaky guy. I know you well enough to know that. that would have been good advice. All right. Second question is, do you have a mantra in life or a mantra these days, Jason?
I this is the one I quote a lot. Jeremy's probably sick of hearing it, but and I think this quote is attributable to my mom. Work hard, play hard. That was the theme of the advance that we just led in Virginia. That's how much it means to me. Yeah, just, you know, and how I interpret that is put your best effort, put your best energy into everything you do, whether it's working or playing.
Love it. Jeremy, mantra?
I think for me, and this is coming off the heels of a bantering and conversation Jason and I had over the weekend via text. If you know Jason better than you know me, he's a movie guy and loves quotes. And for me, the one that we were actually talking about over the weekend that I'm really trying hard to live by is one that talks about, you know, being able to love completely without complete understanding. And that is really, really hard for me. And that's the mantra that I'm genuinely trying to move more closer and aligned with in my life.
Well, tell them what's the movie, bro. Give them the movie quote, or at least the context of the movie.
Let me ask them if they recognize that quote. It's pretty obscure in the
movie.
That's
pretty obscure.
Yeah. Want to take a shot at it, guys?
No. I'll embarrass myself.
Brad Pitt's in the movie, and it's about, if I say this, it's about fishing. That'll probably
be River Runs life. Through It.
Yes.
Nice, Chris. Nicely done.
Yeah.
Great flick.
Do you remember the last scene, Tom Skerritt? It's after Brad Pitt's character dies, and Tom Skerritt is he's at a sermon. He's a pastor, I believe, of some kind, and he gives that eulogy some way about Brad Pitt.
Oh, God, that movie kills. Talk about, it's a movie about brothers, right?
Yeah.
Oh, my God.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Oh, you're killing me. All right, let's move on so I don't, like, get choked up. Last question. Well, and here we go with this. What do you hope that people will say about you at your wake? I'm going to go with Jason again first.
Whoa. that if there are if someone's talking about me, that I would say the people, what I would want people to say most about me is I could trust him. I could, and I could rely on him for anything.
Jeremy?
I would want people to speak to hopefully my character. As I talked about my dad, specifically around, you know, my authenticity and integrity that I feel very passionately and very strong about. So from a very healthy perspective, I hope that people would see that, see the imperfections I have, but also just the way that I'm trying to approach life moving forward.
Nice, boys. A pleasure.
What a treat.
Thank you guys for having us on. I'm not joking, guys. It's an honor. You guys have done a lot of these podcasts. I don't really get to listen to all of them, but I love how you guys do this and you continue to do this. And seriously, when you guys asked, I was like, I seriously feel honored that you guys asked us to be a part of this.
Yeah, you're welcome. I'm definitely feeling rushed. I just want to say that there's so much to cover. As we say, we need to do it again.
Yeah. Yes. So
thank you guys.
Thanks for coming, boys.
All right, guys. Have a good week.
Peace and love.
See you soon. Love you guys.
Adios. Take care.
Take care.
Bye.
This is Chris. Thanks again for joining us on this episode of If You've Come This Far.
And this is Sean. Remember to check us out, mnliving.org.